Hey guys, this is Jamie from How to Open a Dental Office. Thanks for taking a listen to this. You're about to hear an interview between one of dentistry's biggest, most successful stage presences and marketers from the Maddow Group. And you're also going to hear an interview being done by him with the founder of a company that helps you get higher fees doing the same procedures. So I'm really excited for you to hear this. I was given a copy of this. Most clients would end up paying for this series, but I just wanted to give it to you as a thank you for participating in what we're doing. I am sure that if you take great notes in this during the listening of this interview, it's about an hour long. If you take some great notes and come back to the office tomorrow and next week and choose five or six things to implement right away, you're going to see some dramatic results. So obviously, doctors who are looking to open up new practices can implement this in their new practices, but even doctors who have existing practices can use some of these tips too. As a side note, the concepts shared here are different from what my team and I call insurance partnering. The insurance partnering topic gets you higher fees when you open up a new practice. With my team, we coordinate this for you. So when you open up a new practice, we connect you with insurance companies who will pay you more and higher fees for the exact same procedures, oftentimes more than any of the doctors existing in that same town. So anyway, with no further ado, I would like to introduce you to Harold from Apex and the interview that you're about to hear. Thanks.
Welcome to the Maddow Brothers audio series with Rich and Dave Maddow.
Welcome to the Maddow Brothers audio series. I am Dr. David Maddow, and thanks for being with us again. It's so great to have all of our listeners back with us on it's going to be a fantastic program. As a matter of fact, I've got a special guest with me, not on the phone, but right smack in front of me at the studio today. You're going to love him. There's going to be some great information that's going to help your practice immensely, no question about it. So today in the studio, speaking of friends, I've got somebody sitting right in front of me at the mic. His name is Harold Gornbein, and Harold is he's very unique company that he co-founded a little while ago, and we'll tell you about that in a second. But it's something that we as dentists don't really think about a whole lot. I mean, we're thinking about how do we improve our clinical skills, how are we getting more new patients, things like that. These are things that are always on our mind, how we can treat our patients better. But what Harold brings to the table is something very interesting. I think it's really going to help a lot of you out because, as I said, it's something we're not thinking about a lot. But once we start to think about it and think about some of the things we can do, I'm trying not to give this away yet, you're going to be amazed at what you're going to learn in today's program. So without further ado, let's introduce Harold Gornbein. Harold, how's it going?
Great. Thanks, Dave. Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, and I look forward to giving your audience some great information to help them improve their practice.
Well, I'm equally as excited, and it's good to have you right smack in front. But a lot of times, you know, Harold, we do these interviews with people all over the U.S. and some all over the world. We've had people come on from Australia, and it's always good to have a guest right smack in front of me. You can see the body language. You can, you know, I can tell them, I can say, hey, don't say that. You know, but it's always good to have somebody live in the studio. So I appreciate you coming over here.
You can still protect me, Dave, if I'm saying going off course, just still wave at me.
Absolutely, we'll do that. But Harold, so let's start off by, because I kind of teased it, like you're really going to be able to help our listeners with something they're probably not even thinking about. It's not clinical. It's not marketing. Tell us a little bit about what you do in this really cool company that you co-founded a short time ago.
Well, at Apex Reimbursement Specialists, what we do is assist and help dentists generate additional revenue, more revenue from the insurance companies that they already contract with, without producing any additional chair time for them. So, for example, if a dentist contracts with a PPO plan, they're getting paid based on discounts that they've signed off with this particular PPO plan. What we do is take that same existing contract, go back to the insurance company, and negotiate higher fees, getting the dentist paid more.
So let's so let's back up a second. So there are a lot of only fee for service dentists out there that are not dealing with any type of insurance plan at all. But let's face it, the average dentist out there, they're dealing with some insurance companies and some HMOs and PPOs. So your average dentist out there, I'll say average Dr. Joe, we'll just make up that name. Dr. Joe has a practice. He's got some insurance going and some regular indemnity, PPO, HMO, BMO. There are a million different types, of course. I just made that up, BMO, by the way. It sounded good. But is there any type of insurance that is – I'll back up again. It sounds like what you're saying, these are – negotiable. So the insurance companies are paying Dr. Joe a certain amount of money. But if Dr. Joe were really savvy, he could say, hey, look, no, I think you should be paying a little bit more for my services. I'm working really hard and I think I should be getting X amount more. So let's start off by asking the question to you, this expert. Can you negotiate with any insurance company or any type of plan, or does it have to be like a PPO or an HMO?
Good question, and it's very interesting. I think you addressed a key point is a lot of dentists are so busy in their practice day in and day out, clinically primarily, and just running a small business or even in some cases a big business, is they don't think they can negotiate. And we get that question asked a lot. The reality is they can. Are there specific insurance companies that they can negotiate with? They could definitely negotiate with their PPO plan, even in some cases their DHMO plan. But primarily the focus negotiation can take place is at the PPO level. In an indemnity environment, naturally it's just they're being indemnified based on their usual and customary charges. So there's really nothing for us to negotiate there or for the dentist to negotiate there because they can adjust their own fees up or down. It's up to them. But primarily we're focusing on a PPO plan. And in a PPO plan environment, the insurance company is saying, okay, dentist, we want you to sign into our network. Here's your set of fees. And that's all they're going to get reimbursed on. So most of them don't think that they can really change that. As a sole practitioner, they think, I have to take what the insurance company gives them. But really to kind of debunk the myth a little bit, you do have the power and really leverage to negotiate with these insurance companies, but primarily PPO focused.
So let's go real basic here for a couple seconds, Harold, because I know we as dentists, we accept a lot of these plans and they get confusing, PPO, HMO, all that. But so what's your exact definition of a PPO?
A PPO in the basic term is a preferred provider organization. And in that, a dentist, if you decide to participate in that PPO, you're now in network for that PPO plan. And so a member who joins that insurance company now can access you as an in-network provider. And as an in-network provider, you've agreed to charge fees, those contracted fees, to those in-network members, whereby there is an out-of-network component that, let's say, you didn't provide or you weren't in-network as a provider with a particular insurance company. People who participate with PPOs can still see you as an out-of-network provider. You'll generally get paid less than your usual and customary fees because now when you're out-of-network, usually the benefits are lower. The benefits are less rich for a member versus if you were in-network, the out-of-pocket expense for a participant or a member of the plan or in your case, one of your patients, their out-of-pocket expense is less when you're an actual in-network provider.
So staying real basic – what's in it for the dentist to even sign up? Even if dentist thinks, okay, I can't negotiate, why is a dentist signing up for a PPO in the first place?
It's a really, really good question. And we get that asked day in and day out, especially if you're, let's say you're a fee-for-service dentist. You don't take any insurance plans. So why would I choose to participate in a network? What you need to look at is how much chair time I have available in my office. Do I have a lot of empty chair time? The goal in joining these PPO networks is that the assumption is that you're actually going to receive more patients. So having less available chair time, having more patients, and hopefully generating more revenue for yourself. But it's really more of an opportunity to build your practice. That's one area. The other area is you may find a number of your patients walking in and saying, you know, my employer selected this plan for us, and I see that you're not in network. For me to get the most out of my benefits, would you join the network? And that comes up a lot.
Okay, that makes sense. So so Dr. Joe, our made-up dentist, signs up for a PPO or several different PPOs. And when Dr. Joe, and we'll say Dr. Joe is a male, so I'll refer to him as he. We've got to be careful about, you know, not being sexist or anything. But so Dr. Joe happens to be a male dentist. Dr. Joe signs up for this PPO, and he just assumes that, you know, he's signing on the dotted line or on the solid line. He's assumes that there's no negotiation here. Hey, if I want to be in this particular PPO, I'm agreeing to this fee schedule here, and so I want to be in it. Some of my people are asking me that there are a lot of the residents in this area or in this work for this certain company, and they all have this. So I want to be a provider, of course. So I'm signing here without even thinking for a second. Wow, you know, maybe I don't have to agree to these exact fees. So let's say they before they even sign, they're listening to you now. Is there something they could do before they agree to these probably fairly low reimbursements?
It's a really, really great question, especially the example you gave. You gave an example of, you know, I have these patients that are now their employers thinking of joining this network, and they're coming to me saying, hey, doc, we'd like you to join as well. That's the best point of leverage. The key in our business and what we try to do in educating our clients is the goal is creating leverage, because you're not just a number. It's very important that you participate in these networks. A PPO plan is no plan at all unless you participate. They need their dentist. But an example that you gave, which is very good, is that is your key point of leverage. Usually what's happening behind the scenes is that insurance company is trying to put that new insurance plan in place with that employer. And the employer is like, well, I'm evaluating, do I switch from one PPO plan to another PPO plan? But we notice that for our employees, these various providers don't participate. If you knew that going in, when they're at the point of negotiating a new contract from an employer to an insurance plan to an employer, that's your best point of leverage, because at that point, you're in the driver's seat. The insurance company wants to sell that plan to that employer, but they really can't do it unless they have the network of providers that can participate and that see their employees. And at that point, you can say, listen, I'd love to join your network, but I need my fees to be X. You're offering me Y, but I need X. That's very important if you had that background information. So we do a lot of research in that regard to help put a dentist in the best position possible.
But don't the insurance companies try to come across as like almighty and all powerful and pretty much like, well, look, we've got so many dentists. Look at all the dentists in this community. If you don't want to sign up for it, we've got 100 more that want to. So no, we're not going to be, you know, no, we don't negotiate our fees at all, our reimbursement. No, we don't do that.
And I think it's a good point, and we definitely hear it often and day in and day out. But at the end of the day, like I mentioned earlier, a PPO network is not a network without their dentist. Us as an organization, us as a company, we're pretty familiar with how many dentists there are in a given area. We're pretty familiar with the employers that are choosing particular plans in that area. What we do in representing a large number of dentists, we're able to position you as this individual solo practitioner as somebody who's really important to that network. And I think you're right. Sometimes as an individual dentist, they feel they're kind of powerless or just a number. It's our goal, and we could help assist you in that. It's our goal to position you as somebody that's really, really critical of making that plan work. Some of the areas that we look at is location, specialty. You may have some unique skills that other dentists don't have in that area. If we know that information, or if you're able to identify that and actually put it in some type of letter, negotiation letter to the provider, setting you apart from other dentists in that area, that will create leverage for you.
So we've got a dentist, Dr. Joe, is out there listening to this, and he is either participating in some, thinking about joining others, and now he's finding out, you know something, no, I don't need to sign right away. There's some negotiation here. They're offering me X amount, but I can get 2X amount or something like that. I can do much better than what they're offering me. What can Dr. Joe do to like prepare to negotiate with these insurance companies? What's the first step, or what are some of the first things he can do?
It's a good question. There are a number of steps. Some things that we advise dentists to do is kind of take a look at, see who they participate in, the insurance plans they currently participate in. They can look at creating a list of their top utilized codes, maybe the top 25 utilized codes with these providers, and also maybe even do a survey or ask the patients which insurance plans that they participate in, that they're, and they're actually seeing the dentist. And you may think to yourself, you know what? There may be many more patient opportunities here if I join that network, because my patient just told me about XYZ network and I don't participate in there. Maybe I can grow my practice by participating in that network. So again, you want to prepare who you participate with now, create some top 25 codes utilization, see who you don't participate with today. And if there's an opportunity, you feel there's an opportunity to grow your practice because things that you're hearing from your patients or in general, you want to grow your practice, you want to prepare some of those basics. And we can, and it's not rocket science, but hopefully through our conversation today, you can learn how to do that.
We hope to be able to teach, because I know there's some dentists out there, some Dr. Joes and more than Dr. Joes who are just chomping at the bit now. Wow, I can negotiate this. I can somehow, I'm getting reimbursed, but I can increase my bottom line of my practice just by talking to a few insurance companies. Well, I'm going to make more money. So who doesn't want to hear about that? That's great stuff. So okay, so let's say we're doing this. We've got our list together of the plans we're participating with. We're getting our top 25 codes and all the stuff you just mentioned. What's the next step in preparing that actual negotiation? What are we doing?
I think the big key, there's two keys in that. One, in identifying again what your skill set set you apart from dentists in your area. Again, our goal is to create leverage in that negotiation. And set yourself apart. You're not just a number. Location, any specialties, any skill sets that set you apart there. Those are a couple basics. At that point, the next point is you can prepare all that data. You could have a great negotiation letter. But if you don't know who to negotiate with, you're not in a really great position to generate the increases that you're looking for. As you know, an insurance company has many, many layers of bureaucracy. And if you call the 800 number, you may be sent from one place to the other, never actually speaking with the right person who can make a decision. The key is find out who those key players are in an insurance company, because they're the ones that can actually get you the fees you need and deserve.
So it's interesting. You mentioned negotiation letter. So I take it this negotiation is done more via letter as opposed to like me calling an insurance company, or I call an insurance company on the phone and say, hey, look, I'm Dr. Joe. I'm one of your preferred providers, but I just need to have higher fee. I need to have higher reimbursement schedule. It's done more as a letter?
Well, you want to have a paper trail. You know, as you find working with insurance companies, sometimes the bureaucracy can take you from one place to the other. Nothing ever really getting done. And so much time goes by, you know, days, weeks, turns into months, and pretty soon you get frustrated. And I think that's part of the makeup of the insurance companies, is to get you a little frustrated, so you'll just give up and not keep pushing. So if you actually know who you should be working with, prepare an actual nice document that illustrates why you're important to them and why you deserve an increase. And again, we could help people prepare that kind of data and leverage, but this letter needs to sell them on why you're important. And when you put together this letter, we call it a negotiation letter, but any type of document that says, you know, dear so-and-so company, I've been with you X number of years. Again, we're speaking about negotiating with a company you already participate in, but participating with you many, many years. My patients seem to be very happy with me and with you, and they'd like to continue with you. Put together a letter like that. And you want to present it because you want to say, listen, I would like the opportunity for you to review my fee schedule. It's been X number of years. And then at that point, you actually started the process. It's a formal request. Over the phone, it may not go anywhere. But you can either send a letter via snail mail, certified. You can send an email. The goal is to get the process rolling with the right people at the insurance companies and then go from there.
So in a couple seconds, we'll talk about like who those like right people are. But so you're saying in this letter, and I know the purpose of this program today is not to draft an actual letter,
but
just to get some ideas though. You mentioned I've been with you for X number of years. You mentioned a little while ago about location is important, the procedures you're doing. But how like How do you use those? How do you leverage those things to say, because of the location I'm in, or because I'm doing these types of procedures, I deserve more money, I deserve higher reimbursement? How do you leverage that into that?
It's a very unique skill. I think it's a very good point, something I think we work very hard on and feel is a very important part of the process. Sometimes it's not easy to do that, but when you bring up location, why location is important? You yourself, you could take a look at, you know, you participate in Plan A. You may go onto their website and say, listen, I want to pull up all the providers in my zip code, my 21215, and pull up how many providers that are either a general dentist or my specialty in this area. You may look and say, you know what? I didn't realize it, but I may be the only provider with this specialty or this certain skill within a 5-mile radius, a 10-mile radius. And then that actually inherently builds in some leverage, because otherwise, if you leave the network, their patients may not be too happy having to drive a lot farther from where they're used to in their neighborhood near the employer. So location is very important, and skill sets are important as well. So even though you might be, let's say, a general specialist or generalist, and you're doing a lot of different things, there's still many things you may be working on, either implantology, even some perio work that general dentists generally don't do, but you may be doing. And so instead of going to a specialist for those procedures and actually costing the insurance company maybe more out of pocket, if they keep you in the network, you're performing procedures that may actually be saving them money.
So that's very interesting. It sounds to me like these insurance companies, maybe they even know that every dentist in their network in a certain area has like a, let's say, has like a value. And maybe they're looking at some that are like really, really valuable. And if this guy leaves the network, we're in trouble. And this guy down here, not so much. If he leaves, no big deal. So is there a way to like find out through some kind of inner circle, like how valuable you are to this PPO?
I think the geography is an easy one to do. And I think you can ask, and when we talk about key people later on, like a network manager or a network recruiter, they may be able to give you some feedback of other dentists in the area and some of the claims that they're seeing. As we speak about specifics here, one thing you're saying, well, these insurance companies sound like they know a lot about what's going on in an area. You're darn right. They definitely do. And they see all the claims coming in from all their dentists. And it may, if you think about it from an obvious, maybe simple way to look at it, well, look at all the claims coming from that particular dentist in that location who happens to be a provider for a large number of employees with that large employer. They are definitely tracking that information. So if now you're that key provider, you may not know that. And I think kind of just your question of how do I know that? An organization like us, a company like ours, we work with a lot of dentists and we have a very good intimate knowledge of all the dentists in each geographic area. So we compile that data as well in working with our clients. So we see it from a very global perspective. At the same time, I assume if somebody isn't working with us and you're an individual practitioner in a given area, I assume you have a pretty good referring network of other either specialists you refer to or that refer back to you. You could probably get a pretty good feel of the types of providers that are in your area as well and the employers in that area.
Very interesting stuff, something that we really just generally don't think about on a daily basis. It's pretty intriguing. Now, I'm also, speaking of intrigue, I'm intriguing about this who to send this letter to. So how do we – you said there's all kind of bureaucracy and all kind of people answering different phones and emails. How do you zero in on that exact person that has the ability to actually raise your reimbursement schedule?
It's a very, very good question, and how do you do this? If you can imagine the insurance companies, you've got your 800 number, which is kind of like a bottomless pit to a certain degree. I'm sure many of you in the listening audience have probably got lost in that 800 number before.
There are some pretty bad stories. It's impossible to get the right person in insurance company.
which is no fun. And some level, we experience that to a degree as well. But so we feel your pain. But then you have that person, that person in the middle, really the network recruiter or network manager. And really, if you look back in the first time that you joined that PPO, it could have been again, we're talking maybe a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. Somebody probably came to you to help you join that network. That person is usually called a network recruiter, network manager, and they're incentivized to make sure that you come onto the network and that you stay in the network, and that is critical. So they're really financially incentivized to do so. So if you look back on some of that paperwork, you know, if you ever find it in some of your deep down files somewhere, you may see a letter from somebody saying, welcome to my network. You may see a name on that letter. Usually that's the person who recruited you or managing your participation in that network. That's a very key person. There's, again, that 800 number, they can't really do so much for you. They're not the ones you want to speak to. The next layer up is that person that probably recruited you or is managing you. The upper level after that are really the executives with the insurance companies, and they don't really have an incentive to pay you more. Their paid bonus is naturally on how much revenue the company makes. It's those middle people, the network recruiters, network managers. Their goal specifically in that job is to recruit you and retain you. So those people are the ones that really are incentivized to work with you. Those are the ones you want to reach out to.
So doctors out there, make sure you go through your paperwork. Who knows where it might be, but that person that actually signed you on and tried, you know, kind of wind you and dine you to get into this network, make sure you have that person's name. And hopefully if they're still with the company, hopefully, because I think there's got to be a lot of turnover and that kind of stuff. I'm betting.
There's definitely turnover, but keep in mind is the key is knowing the right person, but also just the terminology. When you call an insurance company, I'm Dr. Joe and I'm looking for somebody that can help me. Well, the more you know, and well, listen, where's the network recruitment department? Where's the network management department? If you have the terminology down, that might give you a little leg up on that 800 number that you just called. So again, trying to drill down to the right person within the organization can help you will make the difference between you staying with an old fee schedule, getting paid a certain amount that you may not be totally thrilled with, and getting that increase that you need.
So make sure everybody write this down. Make sure you get in touch with the network recruitment department,
yeah,
or network management department. That's a great, great start. Let's take a little detour for a second. Then we're going to come right back to this. But I'm just curious. So anybody listening to this, like Harold, what kind of increases could somebody expect? Like, I hate to have somebody listening to this program and they get all excited and then they find out, well, I'm only going to be able to make if I do everything that Harold's saying, I'm going to make $100 extra next year. That's probably not going to be worth their time. So what are we talking about? Are we talking about like big money?
I think it depends on. I think we are. I think we're talking about big money. And I see a lot of utilization reports from a lot of providers that show what revenue they are generating, and making significant percentage increases do help, can really go to the bottom line. So from a number standpoint, again, in my position, we don't want to make any commitments. Past performance is an indicator of future performance. However, I'll give you some averages. We have some dentists that we've gotten, let's say, 3 to 5% increases, which again, that sounds like a very small number, to some of our providers getting 145% increases on some of their codes. So there's a wide, wide range. So, and that's why we talked about earlier, and we try to impress upon people is we want to focus that negotiation. You, the dentist, want to focus that negotiation on your top utilized codes. So if I tell you, you got a 145% increase on a code that you don't utilize, it's really meaningless. We want to focus on the codes that you're utilizing most. That's where we want to make the biggest increases. So to kind of make it simple, kind of take a step back a little bit and making it simple of what kind of numbers we can really speak about. Our book of business, the types of increases that we're getting overall, let's say Dr. Joe comes into our practice and says, okay, I want to send you to work. Go out and do your job. What should I expect to receive in an increase in revenue from that schedule? On our average right now is about 10%. So if you're hypothetically generating $100,000 from insurance company A, that's $10,000 more this year that you didn't have before. The additional beauty to that is, number one, it's just revenue straight to the bottom line. It's not additional chair time. You're not seeing any more people. It's the same amount of people. You're just now getting higher reimbursements for it.
Yeah, I mean, the analogy would be, look, if you've got a mortgage on your house and You can refinance it and get a little bit of a better interest rate. You do it because over time, it's going to mean a lot more money in your pocket. Well, this is the same type of thing. I mean, if you've got, if you can get a 10% increase on your average fees, reimbursements from these insurance companies, that's very, very significant. And like you said, it goes to the bottom line because you're not treating any more patients doing that. You're not increasing your overhead. It's just, it's money that's going into your, basically into your pocket.
It's the best thing. It's no additional overhead. So people, we spoke about earlier, is can I do this? Why should I do it? It's obviously, it's definitely possible. Our experience tells us it's possible. And the percentages are, we're talking real money.
Absolutely, real money. And then we like real money. Real money, that's the most important kind of money, the real money. So let's say somebody is, a doctor is even considering right now signing up with a PPO. And of course, they come in with all, you know, the network recruiter comes in with all the paperwork and they're bringing all the good stuff and shaking hands and being a nice guy and everything. And they receive a fee schedule. So one of the things, of course, is a proposed fee schedule.
Right.
How does the doctor look at that and know if that's good? If should he sign on the spot? How do you evaluate that?
You know, I think in most the sign and negotiate, best part of negotiation is the first thing is you are going to get a proposal. Never take the first proposal. That's rule number one.
Like
is
never. Take the You're saying never.
Never take the first proposal. If anybody here has probably bought a car before, you probably know that you're going to negotiate a little bit. So, or when you're buying that new ADEC chair, so you know it's not the first offer.
Wait, you're saying that your dental chairs are negotiable too?
Yeah, you know, I'm sure those in the listening audience, I'm sure negotiate their supplies and equipment a little bit.
Pretty much, you know, yeah, that's a really good point. I think pretty almost everything in life is negotiable. Especially, you know, when you're buying, yeah, I agree with you. And I think it's a good point. So it's a little bit of a good sidebar because like doctors out there listening, almost anything you do, you brought up, you know, dental chairs or dental supplies. Yeah, you know something? They're all negotiable, everything. So even if you, even if you're not a member, a participant in a PPO and you're listening to this because you're curious, doctors, you can negotiate almost anything you're doing in your practice. Negotiate it down, and that, again, that'll go right to your bottom line because you're 100%. Not changing anything. You're not seeing more patients. You're not, you're not increasing your lab costs. You're not doing, you know, it's money in your pocket. So good point, Howard. I like that.
Yeah, definitely. You want to negotiate. So don't take that first letter. What you want to do though is kind of go back and say, okay, I want to counter this first proposal, and how do I go about doing that? Again, on your own, if you participate in a few other fee schedules, you can kind of take a look at what fees you're being paid from those other plans you're working with and say, you know what, I just got this offer and I'm paid, I don't know, whatever the number is for this ADA 120 code, but the other companies that I'm already working with are paying me more. I think you go back to take that counter proposal and say, listen, I'd like to join your network. But the other networks I'm already participating with now are already paying me more than what you're offering me.
But suppose they're not. Suppose they're not. I mean, can you fudge it somehow and say they are? How does that work? They all know, right?
I think you take a look at your own fee schedule that you normally charge, and you have an area that you're comfortable with, a number that you're comfortable with. I'm not saying give away the farm just to join a network. At the end of the day, you need to make a living. You need to pay your overhead. Take all that into consideration. I think you just come back with a number that you're comfortable with. It may not be a lot of rocket science behind it, but put together a number that you're comfortable with. Worst case scenario, they could say no, or let's say they meet you in the middle somewhere. You still didn't take that first proposal.
Never take the first. Just like anybody going out buying a new car.
That's
I wonder
right.
how many people really do go into a car dealership and they say, okay, here's how much your new car is going to be. And they say, okay, I'll take it. Does anybody still do that, do you think?
I hope not. I haven't met one. It's no different in the dental insurance business.
Very true. So, once you've accepted that new schedule, what do you do at that point?
I think it's really key. The key number one is getting that signed proposal, that signed new schedule. You want to make sure that the new schedule they sent you is on their letterhead. You want to know the effective date. You want to know how long that fee schedule is when it'll expire. You want to know that because you'll probably want to maybe start pre-negotiating before the other one expires. That's a key little point there. But you want to make sure that you have the fee schedule in hand. What you also want to do, again, this is a little extra time, but it's definitely worth it, is let's say you're now effective. It's June 1st. You're now a participating provider and you're seeing patients, and now you're submitting claims to that new the PPO network that you're participating in. It could be either just a renegotiated schedule from what you've already had in place. You want to audit that. You want to look back a month previous and say, you know what? I had that schedule in place. Let's make sure that they upgraded my schedule. As you can imagine, sometimes you may negotiate something. You may have a signed letter, but it didn't get implemented at the insurance company's system level. You want to audit that. Don't assume at all that they're following through with everything they tell you they're going to do, which I think they have great intentions. These companies are great. But so, yeah, still a little human intervention. Sometimes errors occur. You want to make sure that you are getting paid the fees that you negotiated.
It's also interesting because I never actually realized that there's a true expiration date of a fee schedule. So
what happens typically is, let's say you sign on with a plan and they've given you your schedule. Those fee schedules usually are in play for about 12 months to 24 months, depending on the company. At that point, some companies either will just auto-renew and may either give you no increase at the end of that term, or they may even downgrade some codes. If you're not keeping an eye on it, you may end up losing some money as well at the end of that expiration. Some of them will give you a little increase too. But again, just like we mentioned earlier, just because they gave you a little increase doesn't mean you should just take it. That's an opportunity to negotiate a little bit.
Yeah. So once your new schedule is implemented, then what's the next step from there?
You want to confirm that everything's implemented correctly. You're monitoring your claim activity. You're monitoring what you're reimbursed. At that point, once you've gone through a few monthly cycles of this audit, and you feel that everything's in place, they're doing exactly what they're saying, they're paying you what they said they're going to pay you, then it's still probably important to audit yourself maybe once every 6 months or so to make sure those claims are still being paid at the level that you agreed to. And again, as I mentioned, monitor, know in advance what your expiration date is. If it's 12 months or 24 months, let's say it's 24 months, which is usually common. It's most of them are 24 months. 18 months into it, maybe put a little tickler in your calendar. Hey, maybe I should be proactive here and send a little letter or a little, hey, I love participating with you. I'd like my fee schedules reviewed. Opportunity to start the negotiation process again. Just because you joined and you expired at 24 months doesn't mean you should take what they give you or sit passively. You need to be proactive. In a tough economy, you know, we're trying to find dollars wherever we can. Be proactive with the carriers.
Can you be like a real schnorr and let's say the term is 18 months or 24 months.
Right.
When you get to like 12 months, can you say, hey, look, I'm ready for a renegotiation now. I'm not going to wait for the full term because I think what I'm getting is not fair.
Well, this is a game of fairness. You know, you have to look out for your practice and what's in your best interest. The insurance companies are doing okay. In general, I think we all feel pretty good. They're doing okay. I tell you, actually, it's a very good point because a lot of people ask us, well, I know my contract doesn't expire for another 10 months. What can you really do for me? Should I even do anything? We are, as an organization, we're pretty proactive and we try to educate our dentists to be proactive. Just because your term is 24 months, it's not always locked in stone. You can be proactive and look for even an opportunity to review midterm. Conditions may change in the market. You have no idea. Your patient base might be just exploding, and you're seeing all these new patients from this particular carrier, which is a great thing. But again, your importance to that carrier may be growing as well. So your leverage may be increasing. So I don't let a fee schedule sit too long without being proactive.
So when you're helping dentists, are you generally can you help them midterm also, or do you generally look at somebody and say, okay, well, your term ends in 12 months, so we can help you then? But midterm's totally fine.
We're proactive day one when we meet a client that wants us to work on their behalf wherever they are in their term. We like to be proactive. Now, keep in mind, generally, if somebody just joined a plan a month ago and they called us and say, hey, I'm really not happy with what they gave me, a month in may not be a great opportunity. Again, just like in life, there's a lot of cycles there's certain opportunities. And for us to get the greatest return for you, it's good to come in at the right time.
Right. That makes a lot of sense for sure. So if you've signed up, a month ago, then chances are you're going to have to wait at least a little bit.
You might have to wait a little bit. Yep. Let's get some claims in before we can, because the key is you want to be there a little bit longer as well, because you want to build your case.
You want to prove yourself.
That's right.
Exactly right.
That building creates leverage, and what we do, leverage is key.
So can we just we've talked a lot about this. So can we kind of, you want to just kind of like recap some of the main points before we move on to the very next subject? Kind of like just give a little quick recap or quick review.
Right. I think a recap of what we spoke about so far is primarily, again, we hear from dentists that think, can I negotiate? The reality is you can. And the key is, like, how do I do that? One, you want to put together a little insurance profile for yourself and say, listen, which plans do I participate in now? Where am I getting my patients from? What are my top utilized codes? Put together some information there. What sets you apart from those dentists? And when you begin that negotiation, you want to compile that data and then present it again to the right person. The right person is key in those companies to get you the greatest return possible. And then after you've done that and your new schedule is implemented, you want to audit it for accuracy. You want to make sure that you're getting paid exactly what they promised you.
So also, we are dentists. We're not lawyers. Well, we try to pretend we're business people sometimes. We're dentists. So are there, in this process, are there any kind of like legalities that we need to be aware of before we start getting into this negotiation process? Fill us in on some of that.
It's a really, really good point, because a lot of people don't think about this.
Sure.
Is the big thing that we're looking at from a legal standpoint is dentists, as individual dentists, and I assume in the medical profession as well and others, is there's a concern. There is a definite concern for collusion on some level. You can't go to your buddies and the other dentists in the area, put together a group and strong arm an insurance carrier to get you. Listen, we're going to boycott you, and we're going to leave you as a collective. We're going to leave you.
Why can't we do that? What's the law there?
There are definitely some laws in place that you need to be concerned about. Some antitrust laws that date back to the 1800s that prevent you from really looking at the fee schedules of your buddy down the street.
Let me tell you a funny story, Harold. And years ago, I was in this dental study club. So generally what we do is every couple months we get together and have dinner with a bunch of dentists in the area. And of course, maybe go over some cases or talk about anything in our practices. And I remember one time, one of us brought up something like we wanted to talk about fee schedules. And one dentist in the group said, I know for sure that's collusion. We can't do that. No, that's illegal. We cannot talk about that. I'm thinking, like, come on, what kind of BS is it? But that's very true. You can't really discuss your fees with other dentists.
It's really important to be cognizant of that fact, because you don't want to break any laws. You want to get yourself in trouble over this. You'll often see fee schedules and that acceptance letters from a particular carrier, and the carrier says, listen, here's a new fee schedule, and make sure you do not share this with anybody else. The legal ease that they use in expressing that same point. But you can't compare your fees in that regard, because you belong to insurance company A, talk to your friend down the street who also belongs to insurance company A and compare those schedules and say, hey, he's getting paid more than me. I'm going to go back to them. You really can't share that data. And that's a really key area here. And that's one of the opportunities as a third party to a certain degree, we're actually seeing fee schedules of multiple dentists. So you may not be able to see your friend down the street. And we're not necessarily honing in on your friend down the street, but we have a bird's eye view of all the fee schedules that are being paid in your particular area. So when you present us the one that you're working under, we can say, you know what, based on our experience and what we've seen previously, I think there's some opportunity here.
Interesting. Very interesting. What else is for? Anything else as far as legalities we need to know at all?
I think that, the big key is, honoring your commitments as well, and it's a two-way street. You're now contracted with this insurance company. They're saying, you can't turn away. If you're accepting new patients, you can't turn away patients. Those are some of the basics. But the primary that we're focusing on here, especially when it comes to negotiating reimbursements, the insurance companies are concerned about that collusion aspect that antitrust laws really govern. And we at Apex aren't under those same guidelines, so we're actually able to see the data at a much more macro level than you can.
So let's talk about what you do for a second, because I know as a dentist, you know, we're good at what we do. Like I said before, I mean, you know, we're good at, you know, putting implants in and preparing crowns and making people look good and making people love their smiles. But I tell you, honestly, Harold, the last thing I personally feel like doing is writing these letters to the, for finding out the person at the insurance company that I need to communicate with, number one, then drafting some kind of letter asking for a fee increase. I don't think I'd be able to do it right. And I just wouldn't have the confidence. So sounds like this. You do this all day, every day. That's what right. It sounds like to me. So it sounds to me like it would be just much easier for me to turn it over and say, Harold, do me a favor. Look, here's the PPOs. Here are the PPOs I'm in. Do me a favor. Get me as much money as you can. I'm going back to the chair and I'm going to try to just treat patients. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that's what we hear day in and day out. And I think you went to school to practice dentistry, to work with patients, and in some respect be clinically driven. Not necessarily business driven. I mean, again, you're running a small business. You want to make sure it's running as the best possible. But dealing with insurance companies and taking the time and compiling the reports that you know that compete with what we do to be able to create that leverage for you. Generally, I don't think you have the time for that. Your office managers themselves are so a dental practice, I think, is the busiest little business in the world. I mean, in some cases, they're big business, but it's a very busy place. You're focused on treating your patients correctly, getting the right procedures, being up to date on the greatest clinical advances, make sure you have the right equipment. Dealing with insurance companies is not where you find the best use of your time. And frankly, you need to be one that knows your practice, compiles your data, an expert negotiator, someone who can follow the paper trail, someone that can renegotiate and manage this process. That's not necessarily something that we found that it's the best use of a dentist's time. And that's really why dentists come to us. And I tell you, it's amazing where some people ask me, who's your competition? Generally, dentists themselves to a certain degree, because there are many dentists that think they can do it. But it's almost like I've seen this example many, many times where, I mean, Dave, you're in great shape and you probably belong to many gyms or maybe just the pavement, running a lot on the pavement.
I love the pavement. I used to be the gym guy, but I found out that without a gym, if you don't need a gym membership because there's so many things you can do on your own. But I appreciate that.
Right. But no, but doing it on your own is really key. But I think I guess the story I tell is how many people out there, you know, join a diet plan. I mean, how many diet plans are there out there? Diet plan, gyms. People join them. They go, I'm gonna lose this weight. I'm gonna become in great shape. They're gonna spend this money. They're gonna join the gym. At the end of the day, how many people really keep up their membership? How many people go religiously day in and day out to the gym to create that commitment and that diligence of becoming in great shape? We find that in our business as well. Is a dentist or an office manager might say, you know what, I'm gonna do it ourselves. We can do it ourselves. At the end of the day, we'll call a month later. So how'd you do? Well, we haven't started that project yet. We got flooded with patients. We're so busy. This emergency case, we haven't gotten around to it. So at the end of the day, they can do it themselves. And I think we can empower them and educate them in a certain way. But the reality is they have very important things to do in their job and taking care of patients. We feel that we're experts in what we do. And we can get them the greatest return possible and basically saving their time for practice time.
And how does it work? How do you get paid? Does somebody have to pay you? Does dentists have to pay you up front and they're not sure if you're going to get the result or are you paid on some kind of commission, like depending on how much of an increase you get them? How does that actually work?
Well, there's a couple ways that we go about getting paid. There's really two systems, two frames of thoughts that we have. We do have a flat fee model that a dentist can pay a flat fee. And again, offline, if a dentist wants to call us, we'll definitely give them some specific numbers. But generally, we have most of our clients what we have are on a contingency model. It's really that pay for performance. If we don't get increases for that dentist, we don't get paid a thing. At the end of the day, we have almost as much skin in the game as the dentist does. We make the investment in all those man hours, calling it, preparing the reports, all the data, calling the insurance companies day in and day out and doing that work to try to get you the greatest returns possible. But if we don't, if we are not successful, we didn't take a dime from you. So we have that contingency model, which a lot of dentists like. It's a no risk, all reward proposition whereby, again, if we don't get improvements for them, it was our investment in time, not the dentist's investment.
I like that model because I know you've got skin in the game, and I know, look, if I call you and say, "Hey, look, Harold, I want to be making more money. I want my reimbursement to be a little bit higher from these PPOs." And you say, "Yeah," but if you don't get anything, I don't have to pay you a dime. There was like nothing. I have nothing invested in it. But then if you get me some tremendous numbers, yeah, I pay you something, which is fair. I love that.
Right. It's a great model, but again, we're flexible in what we do. So we created the flat fee model that it gives a dentist predictability, and they know exactly what they're heading in for. And for some dentists, that's important. Some of them like, "Hey, we want you to share in that risk." So they'll do that. So depending on the particular dentist's needs, we have a model that'll work for them.
Excellent. Sounds really fair. Now, I'm looking at your website, which happens to be apexreimbursement.com. It's spelled just exactly the way it sounds, apexreimbursement.com. And you got some really good stuff on here, about us, our service, but you got some frequently asked questions. And some of the things we've talked about here are on your website. So in case, any of our listeners want to go to your website, all kinds of good resources here. Find out a lot, in addition to what we've talked about here on the show, you get to find out a lot more about what's going on and how you can benefit from this. And it makes so much sense because here, we're operating practices, working really hard. Why not be getting a fair fee for work we're doing? Why not be getting the most an insurance company is willing to pay you? Why settle? Let's say the same thing. We'll use the analogy going into the car dealer. Why settle on that high price they give you right off the bat and write the check and say or get the financing, however you want to do it, and say, "Yeah, I'm going to pay $50,000 for that car." Why not take an hour or so, and it's a little bit of a hassle, go back and forth a little bit, but then walk out of there instead of paying $50,000, paying $41,500. I mean, in a couple hours, you've made yourself, $8,500. I would take it.
Better in your pocket than somebody else.
Exactly. So is there anything else we need to summarize? I think it's been some great information. It's just one of these things, Harold, that I think our listeners just don't think about on a daily basis. We're busy. We're just not thinking about how we could be, we always talk about, get more new patients. That's how you're going to make more money or do more procedures or communicate better. And that's all important. It's very, very important. But this is just something you can do that sounds pretty predictable. It sounds like on average, you're getting 10% more reimbursement from these PPOs. That's pretty good.
It's significant.
So is there anything we missed? Anything you want to touch on? Anything you want to recap?
I think, again, just you want to instill inside yourself is that in summary, this is an important project. You're seeing patients day in and day out, and we often hear, "I'm not paid enough. I'm doing this procedure, and they're creating these alternative codes, and again, I'm not being paid enough." The key is you are doing this day in and day out, and you have a significant overhead. And if there's in this particular area, you're able to make improvements whereby you're not increasing your overhead, not increasing your chair time, it is significant. So in walking away with, you have the leverage, you have the power to do this. We help you. We can definitely help you create that, taking the next steps to getting you paid more.
I mean, I know what some of our dentists out there are doing. We got some pretty successful dentists listening to this program today, and I'm I'd be surprised. And I hate to give numbers, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'd be surprised if you couldn't put tens of thousands of dollars extra in their pockets a year. I'd be very surprised if you couldn't do that. I would take it.
I'm sure if you're looking at those listeners, I would take it as well. but nobody knows your practice better than you do. So when you're listening to this and you're in your car or you're in the gym through the headset, you're listening to this program, you may already be running through numbers. I see this many patients. I get this kind of revenue from a particular insurance plan. I'm sure you're calculating in your head how much more money that 10% really means and what it means to you in real dollars. I can't speak for you, but I think you know better than I do.
So, Harold, how does somebody get in touch with you if they want to know more, if they want to utilize your service, or even maybe just pick your brain a little bit? How would they get in touch with you?
Anybody listening can feel free to pick my brain. I'm more than happy to help in any way possible. You can reach me out in a couple different ways, or actually three different ways. You're welcome to call our office at 301-861-5239. You can shoot me a quick email, harold@apexreimbursement.com. Two great ways, and I'll get back to you. If I'm not there and I don't pick up instantly, I'll return your call very quickly or your email very quickly.
Fantastic. And how about if we just give your website address one more time, just in case you gave your phone number, email address. And again, website is apexreimbursement.com. Harold, this has been a fantastic program. I think you've given our listeners just some good information, just food for thought. I mean, you know, again, like, I don't want to keep repeating myself, but you can, there's more money you can bring into your practice, into your bottom line, just by doing a few simple things. I think you've got some key points there. I really hope some of our listeners, I think they will get in touch with you and get more from these insurance companies, get more income.
You definitely deserve it, and we're here to help. At Apex Reimbursement, our goal is that the bottom line at the end of the day is representing our clients and getting the greatest return possible.
Well, Harold, we really appreciate being on the Matter Brothers audio series, and thanks for your time. And hopefully maybe we can have you back in the near future and get into this a little more, do another topic.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Thanks.
For more information on this interview, be sure to visit matto.com. While you're there, check out the Matto Brothers seminar schedule, as well as the many different ways that Rich and Dave can help you in your practice. And be sure to become a fan of the Matto Group on Facebook and follow Matto Group on Twitter. Remember, you're not alone anymore.